Damon Lemby serves as CEO at Learnit, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million individuals over three decades. A former baseball player at Arizona State, Damon is a two-time best-selling author, speaker, and host of the Learn It All podcast. Damon Dynamite, welcome to Down 40 Love.
I love that. Damon Dynamite, that's a new one. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm a big believer in nicknames, and I know you've probably come across a few just as a former athlete. Let's start with your story, you know, just as a baseball player, just how you got involved and just your evolution in general.
Sure. So I'm Damon Lemby. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And as a kid, I was lucky. Everything was about sports, you know, baseball, football, basketball, huge 49ers fan, Giants, Golden State Warriors. All my buddies were sports. My dad played college baseball. And so, I just played sports all the time. And then around my sophomore year in high school, I realized that if I was going to play either in college or professionally, that baseball was really my ticket. So even though I was varsity basketball all 4 years, I really went all in on baseball and worked really hard, and it paid off for me. I was a high school All-American, and that's what led to my senior year, my really first big decision in life. I got drafted by the Atlanta Braves in the 13th round. And I had a full ride scholarship to Pepperdine University. And my parents were really cool. They said, hey, this is your life, your choice. We'll support you in whatever direction you want to go. And I thought about it a lot. And I ended up going the college route, Ray, because the coach we had there, Hall of Fame coach named Andy Lopez, it's one of my first big leadership lessons that I learned from him, that when he was recruiting me, he had a very clear vision. He said, we're going to build a great team, strong pitching, and great middle of the lineup hitters, and we're going to win the College World Series within 2 years. Now, if you think about that, Pepperdine has like 3,000 students. They never even sniffed the College World Series. I don't even know if they made the well, they probably made the regionals. And so here was this moonshot goal, very clear and very passionate about it, and I really bought into it. And so I went the college route. And that's where, so I go the college route, and for the first time in my life, and I don't know, I could stop if you have any questions about that, or I could keep going.
Well, so was Andy at Pepperdine, or was he at Arizona State?
He was at Pepperdine. So I started at Pepperdine.
You started at Pepperdine. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So, you know, you're sort of in the leadership space with your company, and we can dive into to what you do at Learnit in a few minutes. But what were some of the core leadership lessons you learned as an athlete that you're using today?
Yeah, so I've learned everything I've learned. I would say not everything, but most of what I learned coming into the business world, I learned at playing baseball. And one of my key lessons was how to overcome imposter syndrome, which I think is really important. And a great story I have about that was, so I get to Pepperdine, and, you know, I've always played, I was high school All-American, I played against all these great players, but for the first time, I was surrounded by everybody on the team was as good as I was or better. And I really, and you probably see this with some of your top talent coming into your tennis teams, I really struggled with imposter syndrome. And I was hesitant, you know, I didn't play well. And I remember going on to our first player coach meeting, you know, in the fall ball, and going to meet with Coach Lopez, Renee, and he sat me down. And before I had a chance to say anything to him, he said, hey, Damon, when I recruited you to Pepperdine, I did so because I believed you'd be a middle of the lineup hitter and you were a great talent. Unfortunately, over these last 2 months, I've seen that you just don't have what it takes to play Division I baseball. You don't have the talent. And so I just, and then he sat back and crossed his arms. And I don't know if you ever had a conversation with one of your star freshmen like that, but I the only thing I wanted to do was just get out of there, go see my mom, go home, you know? And before I had an opportunity to respond to his question, he leaned forward, looked at me, and he said, "That's not what I think about you. The problem is, that's what's in your head. You have these limiting beliefs, these self-doubts. And until, son, you're able to overcome that, there's nothing I can do to help you reach your talent. You know, we believe in you. You have the ability, but you need to learn and let go and play. And I would like to say that I immediately left Coach Lopez's office and turned things around. Unfortunately, I got hurt and I left. I had to go to a junior college. I played for a great coach there. And I was seen by Arizona State. And I got offered a full ride to go play at Arizona State. Now, a lot of my friends and other, not my family members, but other people said, don't go to Arizona State. Go to a small school. Go to a place like, you know, St. Mary's, where, you know, there's going to be 17 guys trying out for first base at Arizona State. Go someplace you could play and that you can get your college degree and move on. Well, before I go any further, guess what happened the year I left Pepperdine?
What happened, Damon?
They won the College World Series.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but that's just a great leadership lesson right there. It's like you set a moonshot goal, you get everybody to buy in, and Coach Lopez won the College World Series. So I get to I get to Arizona State, put my imposter syndrome aside, and what I did is I kind of just built this three-step framework that I've always used. You know, it's that, okay, to overcome imposter syndrome, number one is you just work really hard. You know, I was the first guy out on the field. I was the last guy to leave. Number two, I just work on the stuff that's really important, like deliberate practice. I don't know, in tennis, let's say, I don't know if it's volleying or whatever it is you're struggling with. For me, it was hitting curveballs. So I took 1,000 curveballs and hit, right? So work hard, deliberate practice. And then the third step is once you step into the box, you know, step onto the court in tennis, step into a sales meeting, whatever it is you're doing, is that you learn and let go, right? You've put in the hard work. There's no substitute for that. You do a deliberate practice till you get better at something, and then you learn and let go. Stop worrying about your technique. Stop worrying about your serve or your swing or how you're going to do your keynote, and just give it your best shot. You might fall on your face. You might knock it out of the park. Or you might do somewhere in the middle, Renee. But whatever it is you do, you get out of your comfort zone, you do it, and you learn from it. So that was one of the biggest learning lessons that I've carried through my whole life. And beyond that, you know, when my baseball career ended, I had a great career at Arizona State. I thought I was going to continue on. I didn't get drafted again. I didn't realize if I had any transferable skills, but I turned out, you and I talked about this on both the previous two calls we've had, there's so many transferable skills from sports to leadership. You know, collaboration, competitiveness, learning how to be resilient, and discipline. But one of the biggest ones that is I've, you know, modeled, I think, throughout my whole life is just learning agility, the ability to continue to want to learn and grow. And in baseball, you go up to the plate, you strike out, you get a little feedback from your coach, hopefully. You gotta make the adaption, you know, you adopt, and then you get back up to the plate and you know, hopefully succeed. And the same thing happens in business. You know, things are rapidly changing so fast. You have to have the skill. You need to be able to continue to learn and grow.
I'm right with you, Damon. Curiosity is a superpower. It's an absolute superpower. And as you know, if you're an athlete and you're not curious, people are going to recognize that. Most importantly, your coaching staff. And guess what? The less curious you are and the less questions that you ask, by default, the less attention, the less instruction, the less training, forget about deliberate practice, you're going to get. And there's been research all across sports psychology on that. I mean, the more an athlete or an employee, a manager, a supervisor, it doesn't matter what the title, the more engaged they are, the more coachable. And I think that's the word that I wanted to mention, you know, that coachability factor. You know, more coachable you are, the better opportunities you're going to have to grow. Now, that works both ways, right? I mean, you had Coach Lopez who laid out the vision and then gave you some very direct, constructive advice. And then he went out and delivered on his vision without you being there, which is a lesson within, you know, on its own, which is, you know, I am valuable, but maybe I'm not as indispensable as I once thought I was. And we all have that. I mean, you talked about earlier, you know, having imposter syndrome when you went to Pepperdine, you know, and how it might relate, you know, to when players join our program. I think in tennis, because it's such an individual sport at the junior level, I mean, juniors, before they, you know, compete at the collegiate level, are just competing for themselves. And you're happy as a college coach if they got enough experience as doubles players, playing doubles in juniors, because the emphasis is on the individual, which is singles play. So the challenge that we have as collegiate tennis coaches is taking them from that mindset of just it's about me to that mindset of we, you know, that collective vision that we're all after, and that this is a team sport. Action, you know, it's about you maximizing your individual potential, but doing it, you know, beyond just for yourself. Talk to us, Damon, about the difference between know-it-alls and learn-it-alls, because I know you go into depth in this in your book. Maybe you can share a little bit more with us today.
No, first of all, I thought that's really fascinating. I really never really thought about that when it comes to college tennis, but it's true, right? You go from being an individual to a team player. And I can't agree with you more about curiosity and how important that is and being coachable. So those are two great points you brought up. Now, in my book, it's called The Learn It All Leader. And essentially what I'm trying to come across as that, look, I didn't go to Harvard Business School or Stanford or anything. And that's okay. I mean, those kind of schools are great, right? And I wasn't much of a student when it came to Arizona State. But for those of us who didn't get an MBA, you still can have a great career. You still can be a great leader. But a lot of it has to do with having a learn-it-all mentality instead of being a know-it-all. A know-it-all, I think we've all seen them. You know, they're not curious because they have everything figured out. They have all the answers. They know what they need to do. And I don't care if you're some hotshot kid who's number one in the country in tennis and you don't need to listen to your coach because you know the right way to go about serving or whatever it is you're doing, or you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. If you go in with a know-it-all mentality, you're gonna get left behind, right? Some of the best leaders that I've ever met, Doug Conant, who's on your show and my show, I mean, what a wonderful man, and how curious and humble a guy like that is, who always continuously learning. And that's kind of the approach that I've taken my career, is that going in with a learn-it-all mentality, understanding, Renee, that I don't have all the answers, so you want to be humble, and, you know, lead with integrity. That's a key trait. And having the courage also to not being afraid to make bold decisions or get out of your comfort zone. So that's really, for me, the difference between a learn-it-all and a know-it-all. Know-it-alls have it all figured out. They're not open to listening to you. And learn-it-alls, on the other hand, are saying, hey, there's always somebody that's going to be better at certain things. So why don't I get curious and learn from them?
Well, it goes back to, I'll call it your mantra, right? And I think, you know, for those of us who have experienced, you know, some degree of success in what we do, we have operating philosophies, and usually they're really simple. You know, mine has been have a vision, believe in the vision, execute the vision, period. Like, that's it. You know, yours was work hard, you know, practice with a purpose, right? The deliberate practice theory, and then just let it go. I mean, trust when it's time to perform, and don't spend too much time on your technique when it's time to just compete and let it go. What are some of the benefits of lifelong learning? You know, why should someone question or look in the mirror and ask themselves, am I operating from a growth mindset? You know, what would be the benefits of me taking some time and maybe, you know, switching to a growth mindset? What's in it for them?
So I've always been a big reader, and it's probably because my dad was my idol, and he would always, we'd go to Barnes & Nobles, and he'd buy 15 books, he'd probably read a little bit of them, and I just wanted to be like him all the time. And, you know, throughout my career, I would read, you know, 40, 50 books a year, but when I was about, 38 years old, I said to myself, does it even matter? I mean, should I keep reading, you know, so much and continue learning? And I came across this great quote from Gandhi where he said, live like today's your last day, learn like you'll live forever. And it really kind of struck me because it just meant that there's always more to learn and being curious again. And so I just think that life is much more exciting if you take that approach to life where you're open. And I'm not just talking about reading leadership books or having leadership conversations, you know, expand your knowledge base. My wife loves to go to these parties and stuff, and I don't really love it. But what I try to do, you know, being around people that I don't know, but when she throws me in the middle of a room, I think a lot of people would say, Damon can kind of get along with anybody. And it's because I start conversations, Renee, with people talking about things that I don't know much about, whether it's crypto or art or whatever. And I just kind of, you know, listen to what they have to say. And I'm not afraid to ask questions like, hey, I didn't know anything about that. And getting back to your question about what's the benefit of it is that I just think it makes you a more well-rounded, more fun person to be around. And I just think it's much more exciting than I don't know, wasting your time looking at Instagram or watching stupid Netflix shows all the time. I think it's fun to get to know different people, just like I've gotten to know you and learn from them and continue. Maybe it's just being an athlete like you and I are. It's like, I just want to always continue to get better and grow and learn and try different things.
I love it. And to your point on reading, I think the challenge is, you know, when you're reading a lot of nonfiction books or books in the leadership space, it can be tough. You can't expect yourself to go out and execute on all of the stuff that you're reading, right? You need to sort of trust your ability to just retain what you've taken in, and that you'll know what to do, you know, when a specific situation arises. I know that I've experienced that challenge, you know, where I'm reading all this, and you know, even in my books are very tactical. There's tons of strategies. You're not going to go out and execute, you know, the 13 ways to, you know, live out your purpose. Like, that's just doesn't happen, you know. So you have to sort of trust the process and remain open, you know. And I think, like you said, ask questions, you know, and engage with people. And it's one of the fun things that I know you enjoy and I love doing with the podcast. It's just a great way to interact with new people and develop great relationships. And there's always, you never know. I mean, I'm always shocked with something that I learn. There's always at least one amazing takeaway, you know, from the short time that we spend together. Let's shift to culture, okay? Because you really grew up witnessing with your dad being an entrepreneur and, you know, the real estate company that you were sort of born into, you know, on the business side for the family. You've had a front row seat into, you know, what a business culture looks like. What have you learned, you know, about developing and creating a successful high performance culture?
So one thing I want to finish up on what you're saying about reading before I answer that is that I heard a great quote though, that learning without doing is treason. And I believe on that. And you can't execute everything that you read. But if you're going to read a bunch of books or you're going to listen to these podcasts, you got to try to do some of the work, right? I mean, you can't just, you know, I mean, you got to roll up your sleeves and do the work. And that kind of leads into answering your question about what I've seen, the difference between great cultures and poor cultures. A lot of times, poor cultures are led by people who maybe have a yes mentality where, Renee, everybody has to agree with the CEO, right? Everything has to be this person's way, that there's nobody has any autonomy, you know, and that people are stuck in a box. And that is why hire great people if you're going to stick them in a box and you're not going to give them the opportunity to blossom and to grow? And I saw a little bit of that. I mean, my family was incredibly successful, and the real estate business is definitely different than other industries. But, you know, I think that it was you looked at my grandfather and my dad, like, they're pretty stuck in their ways. That, like, this is how they wanted things done. And I think that there could have been opportunities even for them to learn and grow in different ways if they are just a little bit more open-minded. And I've seen a lot of organizations, and even some of the people I mentor, they work for companies where if you don't agree with what the CEO says, I mean, you could lose your job, you know? And when that happens, people come to work and they get their paycheck and they want to go unnoticed. And they just are always watching their back. Now, over the years, what I've seen in great cultures are organizations that I like to say have maybe a learn-it-all culture or have a learning culture. And that's something where people come to work. First of all, they understand what the purpose is of the organization and they believe in that purpose, and they could see how their values align with those purposes. And they have a leadership team that starts, Renee, with that they live the values that they talk about, right? So at Learn It, if one of our core values is, lifelong learning, that it's important for not only me, but the other people in the leadership team, that we're out there actively learning ourselves, you know, and that we're embracing change and doing the work. Because your team, great cultures, people model the behavior of their leaders. You know, leaders are always on stage. So that's important. And then giving your team member, if you want to call it psychologically safe space or whatever, to try things, right? To get out of why hire great talent if you're going to stick them in the box? I said that before. Give them the opportunity to try and fail and learn from those failures. And I've always been a big believer as well, when at all possible, and I talk a lot about this in my book, and it comes up on my podcast all the time, is hiring for potential over experience. I was sharing with you, I've got 10 salespeople. 9 of them are ex-college athletes, and they didn't have any sales experience coming to Learn It, but they have the right attitude and aptitude. They're competitive, they're collaborative, and so you bring these people in, they may not have any experience, but they're willing to work hard, and they're open to coaching, which you brought up, and if you give them that, and you show your team members that you believe in them, and you have their back, I think that's what really fuels a great culture.
What's the biggest obstacle, just in terms of leadership behavior, to creating that culture of lifelong learning?
Well, I think that there's a lot of obstacles these days, or challenges. You know, one challenge is that there's probably 7 different generations in the workforce right now. And all of them are kind of different, you know. So it's a challenge to be able to get to navigate all of that. And two, as nice as learning is, you got to execute. I mean, like you said, you have a vision, but you got to execute on it. So you got to make sure that you got to believe in your people. You got to give them the opportunity to make mistakes. At the end of the day, just like when you put your number one tennis player on the court, that person's got to perform. You know, you have to perform. So it's balancing the need for results and for growth, I think, is one of the biggest challenges, and finding the time to be able to do that. Because we have a lot of clients who work with Learn It where even maybe the leadership team or the HR team wants to invest in training, but the mid-level managers are like, I can't spare my person 2 hours a month, which is ridiculous, to do training because there's so much work that needs to be done. So the obstacle is making sure that you provide the space and the time for the team members to be able to continue to learn and grow, and at the same time being to produce and execute their roles successfully.
Yeah, I love your analogy. just in terms of balance and results. And, you know, it reminds me of what we do in sports every single day. You know, the beauty of sports, and I think one of the things that the sports world brings to the arena of business is constant feedback. You know, in sports, we're getting feedback. If you come to my two-hour practice today with the team, it's 2 hours of constant feedback. Every time a player hits the tennis ball, it's feedback. And they're either getting a check or they're getting an X. There's not a lot of gray area.
Right.
And it's funny because I have a new assistant coach this season, and she's fantastic. You know, but about 1 month in, she's like, you know, you change your mind a lot. And I say, well, we get the feedback changes a lot. The feedback changes every single day. And, you know, I had a great guest on my podcast. Not as great as you, Damon, but
Thank you. He
was still great.
Dynamite Damon. Is that what I'm? Dynamic Damon or Dynamite Damon?
Damon Dynomite. It's with an O.
Dynamite.
I'm going to add an O to it.
Okay.
But so there's a guy named Michael Steinberg. He's a real estate developer in St. Louis, and he does other projects throughout the country, in Colorado and Kansas City and so on. And on my podcast, Mike said, you know, a leader has the right to change his mind. And that's what your comments, you know, just on balance and results and managing the pace of change, you know, and you can't be afraid to make a decision and then pivot and go the other way. You can't let your ego get in the way. At least I can only speak what works for me. I mean, I'm not afraid to change my mind. I mean, we may have one doubles team one weekend and they perform at the highest level. And then the next weekend, they show me some things that, you know, clearly it wasn't a beautiful marriage or as beautiful as it, you know, as they displayed initially. And you have to look at other options because as a head coach, as a leader, you're always thinking ahead. I mean, my mindset is on where do we need to be in April? You know, it's November, but what kind of team do we want on the court in April when it matters the most? So, you know, I think the ability to adapt, like you said, and not only embrace change, but create it, you know, and go out there and put your team members in situations where they can grow, but give them the latitude to grow and the latitude to learn and to go out there and execute, and don't crush them because they didn't execute perfectly the first time. Give them some good feedback, give them some more time to go out there and just keep that process of iteration, you know, moving in an upward spiral. Damon, what does down 40 love mean to you?
You know, one thing, before I answer that question, I wanted to say, you know how I could tell you're a good coach? It's because, Renee, I love the fact that your assistant coach felt comfortable enough to come to you and give you that feedback. Yeah. I mean it, though, yeah. Because what that shows me is that you're one of the, you know, for anybody out there who's a coach or leader listening to this, one of the most important skills you could have. Sure, everybody talks about giving feedback all the time, giving feedback, but is your ability to receive feedback, right? Because if we want to get better, if you want to get better as a coach, if you want to get better in real estate investing, or I want to get better running Learn It, or even being a better dad, whatever, you know, it's like if people come to you with feedback like that, instead of you getting defensive with her, you know, because if you would get defensive with her, she's not going to come to you with feedback anymore. So I think that that's really cool that you created that space where she can come to you and give feedback.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Damon.
It's true, man. Now, what does down 40 mean to me? Down 40 love mean to me. First of all, I told you when I first met you, I love that title. And what it means to me is, okay, you're in a hole, right? You're in a hole, but you're not out of the game. And let's say in tennis, as in life and as in business, you can't go from 0 to 100 and get back to deuce. You got to just do one thing at a time, right? So down 40 love means that, hey, when this guy serves the ball to me, I got to get it back. and I got to win this point. And so it's climbing your way out of the hole one step at a time, realizing that you're down, but you're not out. And if you do the right things and you take it one step at a time, you can climb out of this hole because you've done it before and you can win the game and the match in doing so.
I love that. I love that, Damon. Thank you. It's just so true. You know, you can only play one point at a time, and it's become such a cliche, you know, like, oh, go play one point at a time. Or, you know, you hear it in business and leadership circles all the time, or in entrepreneurial circles. Start small, right? Start small, you know, take one step. And it's true. It's annoying to hear, you know, depending on what your situation is, you know, just focus on this point and just trust, you know, just focus on the next 30 seconds and give your best. There's no guarantee of success. You may fail. You may lose the game. And then what are you going to do from there, right?
Yeah, but I got a business example real quick that I have about that is in the middle of this last year, Renee, we were struggling. Our numbers were down. We were literally down 40 love. I mean, this was like a terrible year. It was at the time. And I there's no way I can go get it all turned around. But the very first step that I needed to do, which is not easy, is I let go our chief revenue officer. I made a change. So that was a change. It's not a small change. It's a big change. But that was the one change that started turning everything around, that ended up turning things around for us. But it was a risk. And it was, some people really liked the last CRO we had. But it was a pivot we needed to make. And as a leader, as a coach, like you shifting around your doubles team or changing whatever, you have to make those changes, but one step at a time.
Definitely one step at a time. And those steps are going to look different for everyone. You know, it's like that step when, to me, that's a pretty big change. You know, you're making a personnel change. That's pretty big, but it's still a step.
Correct.
Right? You know, for another leader, it could be having a difficult conversation. Yeah, you know, having that one-on-one, you know, and getting things out on the table, and then maybe giving them a little bit more time to see if they can, you know, do a performance turnaround. But that step, you know, that point can only be played, you know, one at a time.
One at a time.
At the end of the day. What are some simple techniques that you've learned and that you've practiced to overcome adversity, you know, whether it be personally or in your professional business life?
Well, you know, one thing I learned is that we're all still here, right? So as bad as things are, we've overcome our worst situation. So having the confidence in yourself to understanding that you can get out of this is important, right? You can overcome the adversity. The other thing I've learned, Renee, which I think is very important, is there's only certain things you can control. So there's constraints that maybe you have to work in, whether it's personal, whether it's business. So stop worrying about what's outside of your control and focus on what you can control and put all your energy and attention there to do so. And then the third one, and I think this is very important, is that, again, business or personal, don't go at it alone. I'm sure you have resources or other tools that you can turn to. And if you don't, find some, find a coach, find a mentor. But adversity's tough, and find other people or other individuals that can help you go after it. So you're not going at it alone. Like when Learn It had to pivot from in-person training to virtual essentially overnight, I was super stressed. I mean, all our classes were canceled. I didn't know what we were going to do. So at least I was vulnerable enough to turn to my team and say, hey guys, I need your help. You know what I mean? What should we do? And, but I was vulnerable, confidence, like we're going to figure it out. And I turned to mentors and I turned to other people I knew, and I surrounded myself with great people and I got great answers, and we pulled our way through it. So, you know, realize, you know, step number one is realize that you've done it before. Step number two is, you know, focus on what you have control over, work with inside your constraints. And number three, don't go at it alone.
I love that last one in particular. You know, I like to say, just pick up the phone. I mean, when I think about the tough times that I've gone through in my life, some deep, you know, sort of cavernous type of moments, I've always picked up the phone. I've been fortunate enough to have friends and have a circle of influence, you know, of people who could bring a sense of calm and stability and perspective to the situation. And I think, you know, a lot of people feel like they've got to figure things out all by themselves. Guess
right,
what?
They don't.
They're called know-it-alls.
Right? You're right. You're right.
But, you know, just pick up the phone, you know, shoot a DM. You know, people want to help. Your friends want to help. And, you know, you mentioned the word confidence, and that's so key. You know, it's so key. I mean, everyone wants to talk about vulnerability. I get it. And there's a place for that. But that flows. It's a result of having enough confidence in yourself.
Confidence is so important.
Yeah. And like fundamental, not blowhard, you know, ego, you know, beating your chest, you know, type of ambition. I'm talking about true belief in yourself, true belief in your destiny, true belief in the people that you've surrounded yourself with. So you can go and ask those questions. You can say, hey, if you were in my position, you know, what are the three things that you would do to turn things around? And feel completely comfortable and safe asking that question, even though the buck stops with you. You know, coming from that place says nothing negative about you as a leader. It says all things positive, you know, and it's a reflection of how strong you are. And it's only going to build up, you know, more credibility, you know, amongst your team. Damon, you've been amazing so far. Let's wrap it up with what do you want your legacy to be?
What do I want my legacy to be? I would like to be remembered as an authentic, genuine leader, you know, somebody who had integrity. If I said something, I did it, and that I believed in my team, you know, and I gave them an opportunity to succeed, and I always had their back. And of course that I was a great father and husband. I got two little kids. I know I'm, you know, up there in age, but a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I want them to look at me the way that I looked at my mom and dad as I was growing up.
How did you look at your mom and dad?
How do I look at my mom and dad? I looked at them, a great question. My mom's still alive, my dad's not, but I knew that my parents were incredibly supportive as parents, but they were tough on us, right? I mean, we couldn't just sit around the house, but I knew they always had our back, and they also gave us a lot of leeway, and maybe it's because I was a first kid, but you know, they taught us the difference between right and wrong. And, but they gave us a lot of leeway, and they didn't get too pissed at me when I did something stupid. And then as far as my dad, as a business leader and a human, he loved giving people underdogs a chance, right? He'd always give, he didn't care if you're the CEO of Morgan Stanley, you know, a barista at Starbucks. He treated everybody the same. And I just always admired him for that. And when I'd get to watch him at a shareholders meeting in front of 500 people or 1,000 people giving presentations, I was just so proud. And so I hope that my kids and wife and that my Learnit employees and team feel the same way.
I love it. Damon, I want to thank you for your time today. You are truly authentic. You know, I think that's what I love about you the most. You know, your ability to communicate, I think, honestly and candidly, and, you know, just in the most positive sense, just sort of not caring, you know, just like letting it all hang out, I think is very disarming. And I think it's probably one of the keys to you being, you know, a highly successful leader, you know, at Learnit and, you know, in your personal life as well. And you're just a fun guy to be around. And I hope that we can have a lot more of these conversations going forward.
I'm counting on it.
All right, good. Thanks so much, Damon. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our time today.
Thank you.